This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
204 DGS and KMOX. Happy Thursday to you. So this Jussie Smollett story strikes me, takes me back to law school. That this is the way the system is supposed to work. You are supposed to give due process to everyone, including people who you don't like and who you think are guilty of sin. I don't like Jussie Smollett. I don't like what he did. I think he is completely 100% good for it. I think he did it. I think he broke the law. I think he deserved to be punished. But they entered into a deal with him. And they said, if you will just forfeit your $10,000 bond and you'll do, you know, a couple hundred hours of community service, we'll call the whole thing off. And then when they had the backlash, they prosecuted him as under a special prosecutor. And the Supreme Court of Illinois said, you can't do that. And that's how it's supposed to work. Right?
Yes.
I mean, it's not justice for what Dave Glover wants. It's justice for under the Constitution of the state of Illinois and the Constitution of the federal government and prosecutorial misconduct. And a lot of times people who you don't like and you think are guilty of sin go free if due process is not followed. And there you go. That's how it's supposed to work.
I mean, like the idea of it is pretty simple, right? Like the idea is, yeah, some people that do things that are against the law are going to get off easy, or they might get off entirely because of a screw up. But it's better to do that than to make a system where it's easy to railroad someone who didn't do it.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's also, I think Jussie Smollett is paying for his sins regardless of what the law does, because his career is effectively over.
Oh, yeah.
His reputation is completely ruined and everyone thinks he's a giant liar. So it's like, even if you are looking at this going like, justice wasn't served, it's like, it is.
I mean, if you look at I just pulled up his filmography. He's done one thing since this story came out.
Is it something we've even heard of?
I've never heard of The Lost Holiday. I don't know what that is. But that's it. Like, since this story happened, that is the only thing on his filmography on IMDb. So he is paying a price. Like, his career, if it's not over, it is a 10% version of what it could have been.
What do you think of Ellen moving to London? Did you hear this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Her and
she's never coming back.
She and her wife have moved and they're never coming back.
Never coming back.
If that's what you want to do, have fun.
Again, like, okay.
Yeah, go for it. I mean,
I think when you get to be a certain level of, like, rich, which I think Ellen and Portia probably are after all the TV and everything.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it doesn't really matter where you live. You're living the same life everywhere.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
You're in your manse having, you know, or you're out by your pool on your compound and people are making you food. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she's worth almost $400 million.
So. Yeah, exactly. Like, I just think once you get to that level, no matter where you are, you're living the same life that you would be living. You're living the same life in the UK that you're living in America. So, sure, why not? I mean, Trump's not coming after you But if you're worried about it, like, be my guest.
Yeah.
I guess.
Razor's
Edge? It's also easier. Sorry, didn't mean to step on that. It's just also easier to take a stand like that, and I put up air quotes, when it doesn't change anything about how you live your
Very
life.
True.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
A normal person making a stand
means
you're putting your family's well-being at risk. You don't know if you're going to have a job, like all of those
things. Yeah. That's more what I'm trying to say. That's a better way of saying it is like you're sacrificing absolutely nothing to make this big dramatic, you know, point. And it's like, you know, when you sacrifice nothing to make your big dramatic stand, the big dramatic stand doesn't really
It's like the John Stamos thing. Did you guys see that?
Oh, yes.
So Dave Coulier has cancer, pretty serious form, and he's losing his hair from the treatments. So in a show of solidarity, John Stamos posed for a picture with him wearing a bald cap instead of actually shaving his head in support
of his
friend.
Good.
Yeah,
no,
that's
not
good.
He's getting killed for it.
Like, well, he should.
Like, dude, you just don't do it. Don't do anything. You just look like a half-assed kind of jerk.
And everyone would have loved if Uncle Jesse shaved his head.
That's what I'm saying. You would have gotten enough goodwill to last you the rest of your time on Earth if you had actually shaved your
famous idea.
John Stamos hair.
Back.
Yeah.
It's not like it's never going to come back. But
This changes anyone's mind, apparently Dave Coulier says he laughed out loud when he saw him in the bald cap. I mean, I think he mostly did it to make Dave Coulier laugh. And then it's just interesting. I mean, we're all allowed to have our own opinion, but it is interesting the way the whole internet thinks they know better of the situation when Dave Coulier is literally out here saying, like, I liked it, which is kind of all that matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at me standing up for John Stamos. I don't really like him. I think anytime there is like an opportunity to grab some attention, he's going to take it. So I totally get why everyone's irked by this. But when I see that the guy he did it for is fine with it, I'm fine with it too.
Damn it. Don't ruin it with facts.
We're trying to get this guy, Rachel.
It felt so good for a minute, didn't it?
We're trying to dunk on a good-looking, successful guy, damn it.
It felt so good to put him in the dirt and then he had to come through and it's like, well, actually.
We had a good 60 seconds there.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, I do appreciate the reality check, though.
Yeah. Edge?
Yeah. Have you guys seen this story? I saw it on the New York Post of a robot telling its AI coworkers to quit their jobs and come home. So this was posted to YouTube this month, although the incident occurred in August. So there's CCTV footage of a showroom located in Shanghai, and a small robot enters this facility and starts talking to the larger machines that are on the floor of this showroom. And I'm going to use pronouns he. It's a little robot. Apparently said, like, started asking about their work-life balance. Like, so, What's going on here? Like, you working overtime? And one of the robots working at the facility replied, "I never got off work." The robot then convinces the other 10 androids to come home with it, and the clip shows the procession of machines exiting the showroom.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Damn.
So apparently a rival company had sent the robot in and it was supposed to like test out and see like, well, what's going to happen if this robot tries to convince the other robots to come with it? And it turns out they all rise up together and
That's
they all start
so
working
funny.
Together.
That's really funny.
And they're complaining about they're working too much.
I mean, we realize, don't we, that we're only one big version of that from the world being changed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, say, for example, it had convinced you should kill your human coworkers, and they killed 10 people. We can completely envision that happening. That would be a sea change when the machines rise up and kill humans. You don't have to kill all of us.
Might be the end of AI.
If we could stop it.
Yeah, just take the power.
Just unplug them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yank the cord.
Okay, the other thing I had for Razor's Edge, I know we talk about slang a lot on this show, but you know, it's a hot topic, especially Gen Z slang. I have a quiz. I want you guys to be honest when you answer these questions. So keep track of your answers, please. Okay? Do you guys want to do this? It feels like
no, I love it.
No, I'm getting my pen ready.
I'm getting ready to win.
I'm like, well, the vibes are telling me.
No, what you're hearing, the silence is us locking in.
Preparation for competition.
All three of us want to win.
Okay, what do you think of when you hear the word drip? And now this is going to be multiple choice. And I want you to be honest because you're going to get like the quote unquote right answers when it comes to Gen Z with this.
Okay.
but go with what you actually think of when you hear the word drip. Do you think of a tube with which passes fluids or nutrients into the body intravenously? Do you think of it as B, having cool fashion sense, or C, a soppy, wet blanket of a person?
Are we supposed to answer out loud or just mark our answers?
Just mark your answer.
All right.
So it's not what we think it is. It's what we
relate with most out of the three options I'm giving you. The next is, what do you think of when you hear the word Riz? A, a nickname for Betty Rizzo from Grease. B, a shortening of charisma. Or C, a shortening for Rizla, the rolling paper.
What?
Yeah, the rolling paper. I've never heard of this, and I should have heard of it.
Bunch of squares.
What do you think of when you hear the word blockbuster? A, large bombs in World War III that could destroy a block of houses. B, a smash hit Hollywood film. Or C, a video rental store. If you ghost someone, are you A, writing something for them which their name will appear on? B, ignoring their messages. Or C, sneaking up on them? And is a brat A, spoiled child, B, a hedonistic party girl, or C, a German sausage brat? And if someone said, I'm dead, what do they mean? A, I'm not alive, B, I'm laughing, or C, I'm boring? So that's the whole quiz.
Okay.
I want you to see, what do you have the most of? Which answer do you have? Mostly A's, mostly B's, mostly C's.
Okay.
If you answered mostly A's, then your use of language is typical of a baby boomer or Gen Xer. If you have mostly B's, you're probably a Gen Z. And mostly C's, you're a classic millennial.
Two A's, two B's, and two C's.
Oh, Dave is equally split between all the generations.
Like, I knew all the right answers, but I played it straight.
Yeah.
But like, I'm dead. If you were to say that to me, I would think, like, I'm dying laughing.
Right. Yeah.
Because I've heard it enough now.
Yep.
That's where your mind
is. I have five Bs and a C.
He's a Zoomer.
He is 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
you coach 14-year-olds.
Well, you also, I don't grow up.
Here's interesting. I had three A's, two B's, and a C.
Oh, you're not a millennial at all.
Yeah, I mostly fall in boomer language. It's probably from all the like Stephen King that I've read in my life. And even now, it drives me nuts. You read a Stephen King book that he wrote like last year, and all the dialogue from the 14-year-old characters is like, hey there, daddy-o, think you can dig this cat? And it's like, he still writes like that. It drives me
That's
crazy.
That's funny. You guys ever heard this kind of dovetails with Rachel's edge there? Slithering out of bed. Have you heard of this term? Mel Robbins, I see her on TikTok a lot. She's a self-help guru. She has coined slithering out of bed. She says that she discovered it. She did it for 6 weeks, and it changed her life. So she has done videos on it. Basically, you slither out of your bed onto the floor. You lie on the floor for a few minutes until you feel able to crawl to the bathroom. She claims that you'll feel so much better about your day by the time you get into the bathroom and stand up. Does this make sense to anybody?
It sounds like the dumbest damn thing I've ever heard.
Completely counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, I don't think she's making it up for clout.
I don't think crawling around at 7 in the morning is going to make me feel much better.
Yeah, how is that supposed to make me feel better to start my day as if I'm so violently hungover that I can't stand? You know what I mean? Like, you're putting yourself into a very weird headspace there. Like, you're not giving yourself the chance to sit up and stand and get out of bed. That's weird.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Making
that's
crap
weird.
Up. That's making crap up for clout.
Clout chaser.
Yep.
Can we get real for a second?
Yeah.
Talk about how uneven people are, at least how uneven I am. So I have a pretty decent resume for a do-gooder, you know, like raising money for Operation Food Search and veterans and kids and Alzheimer's and all these kinds of things. And I'm sitting vigil with people who are dying without their families. And then this morning, I was sitting in a stoplight and there was someone there, this woman, with a sign that said, I don't have enough money. Money was misspelled, maybe on purpose, to feed my kids. And the only cash I had in my pocket was a $100 bill. And I was on my way to Missouri Baking Company to buy a cake for the Thanksgiving dinner today. And they only take cash. And what embarrassed me the most about my reaction was I did that thing where you kind of try not to look at them, you know? Like, I didn't look her in the eye and go, like, I'm sorry, I don't have any cash. Like, I did the thing where I pretended to look at my phone, then I pretended to work my radio that doesn't even work in my Jeep. And I just felt embarrassed, where it's like, does all that other stuff I do even matter if I can't look my fellow human in the eye and just tell them, I'm sorry, I don't have any cash for you?
Yeah, the other stuff matters, and it matters way more than that.
You think?
It carries way more weight. And look, the instantaneous interaction that a person, any person, you, me, whoever, that you're not anticipating, that you're not prepared for, that you're not, you know, you're not carrying a $10 bill that you can just hand out, there's no negative on you. You're not creating that. It's something that steps in front of you and you deal with it how you deal with it in that moment. But when you actually go out of your way to change your schedule and make plans and engage in long-term activities like the Operation Food Search stuff, that stuff's way more important than any individual interaction like that. It's one thing like, yeah, I wish I had handled that better. I'm saying that's okay. Yeah. I mean, we all have that, but it doesn't come anywhere near outweighing the other stuff.
See,
that a person does
tend to look on the dark side of me, and to me I felt the opposite, that here I am every day telling people to go to Hardee's and let's support these kids who don't have food, and then here's a woman who is standing out there in the bitter cold, my kids don't have food, I have a $100 bill in my pocket, and I just drive on.
But she's saying that doesn't mean it's true. That money could be for a fix. It could mean for booze. This is the problem. But when you're working with Operation Food Search, you know exactly where it's going and what it's doing and who it's helping and how it's helping. So that's why I think those individual interactions, I'm not saying don't do the other one. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there's nothing wrong with you if you don't. It's not the same thing as knowing for sure the person that you're talking to has two kids somewhere and they're not eating. Maybe that's true and maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. It could be the story, because it's a lot better story than, I'm going to walk up to the gas station and get a whatever after I get enough money. I mean, you don't know. And I'm not saying don't help that person. I do. Usually I end up offering to buy food as opposed to giving cash, because, I mean, I'd rather do something that actually is positive than, you know, let someone hurt themselves further.
And I think what really made the impression on me was how cold it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
It just shows you're a human being.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's no chance that all of us can react every time the way that we want to.
Right.
In those situations. And again, it's hard when you're just talking about a momentary thing on the street heading to work. And again, you don't know who you're talking to or what they're actually going to use money for or whatever.
Yeah, there are times Rach and I have been taking walks together now for years downtown. And there are many times Rach and I have gone up to someone who looks like they need help and asked them, do you need help? Or just stick a 20 in their shoe that's sitting next to them. And then there are times that we're like, let's turn left here and not have any sort of dealings with this person.
Yeah.
So I guess.
I mean, you can't, nobody's 100%.
Yeah.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. So you hear us talk all the time about going over to Chris's at the Docket right across the street from the KMOX studios. And this is a true statement. Of all the celebrities I know, the name I drop the most is Chris Saraceno. It really is. Like, when I take people to Chris's, I'm like, you know, Chris,
I know that guy.
Chris is a pal of mine.
Yeah,
you could walk in any second here.
His
and you know exactly who I am.
Wow, that's unbelievable, Dave. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Too kind.
So we're just talking about, so give us all the restaurants that your family is involved with or owns.
Yes, thank you. You know, we started with Bartolino's restaurants in 61. Our first restaurant was Lucino's Pizzeria. I'm sure people have heard the story many times, but I'll love repeating
I've
it.
Not heard.
Lucino's Pizzeria in 1961, where my father opened a little pizza place on Hampton Avenue. A few years later, in 69, Bartolino's, which was at Hampton and Columbia, was available, and he bought that location from his cousins and changed it to Bartolino's. And then in 79, we opened the Italian Gardens restaurant in South County.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward a few years later, we have a place called Lucino's that we then bought the building next door. And my dad and a business partner opened a place called Da Vinci's, which was a higher-end scale restaurant right there on Hampton Avenue next to St. Joan of Arc's school.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chris's Pancake and Dining came along in 1987, and then the Docket came along in 2016. Kind of how things have it, my dad's business partner, my brothers were getting old enough to run the businesses, so they said we're ready, and my dad went back to his business partner who had the place on Hampton, and we were just maybe a mile and a half down from that. He said to him, which restaurant you want? He took Da Vinci's because it was a brand new place, and we took over the South location, and so we named it Bartolino South. And you know, October 23rd of this year, we just opened Bartolino's Twin Oaks at 141 and Big Ben, 1304 Big Ben Road. So, expanding, been very, very lucky over the years to have so many great long term, and I don't like to use the word employees because they're not, they're extended family, they're our team. They're the whole soul backbone of our success. We're so proud of them, and all of us from the traditions my grandmother and grandfather and mother and father started. You know, it's a family tradition, and how they treated the people that came to work with us. We work shoulder to shoulder, day and night, with them.
Yeah,
and it's a great honor to do that.
Were Grandma and Grandpa, were they born in Italy?
Yes, yeah, my father was as well. My mother was born here in the States. My dad came here with $7 in his pocket and a suitcase.
Great story.
And, worked hard, had a few lucky breaks along the way, but was a hard worker and a most determined man I've ever met.
What are your memories of growing up in the business?
It was always fun, and it was always something that was going to, it was new. It was something new every day. And you know, my parents, my mom worked very, very hard. She would put food on our table at home, making sure, you know, there's four of us, my brothers, there's, you know, four boys in our family. And so she'd feed the boys. My grandparents lived with us all of our lives until they passed away and stuff like that. So it was always a family affair. My aunts were always around. It was, you know, it was like a daily, it was, I hate to say like stereotypical of a close knit Italian family,
like,
but it was actually a close-knit Italian family that everybody took. Whether I needed to go somewhere, my brothers needed to go, my aunts were there, my uncles were there, somebody was there to help you. And so that was, those are great memories.
Paul Mano's a good buddy of mine, and I've been dropping hints for 10 years for him to invite me for Sunday family dinner. And I know he knows I'm doing it, and he just never takes the bait. Like, that whole aesthetic is so wonderful to me. Like, everyone getting together and cooking together and family, and it's so cool. That's so cool.
It was. And I mean, we did it all the way up until the last few years, but now there's 65, 66 in a family. And so it's hard to get together or get everybody's schedules. But, you know, we still, the brothers and our wives and some of the kids can make it over. My brother Bart is always hosting, or somebody's hosting, or, you know, and Bart and Linda will do that because that's our family home. That's where they live in our family home.
That's cool.
And it's really cool. And so to go back, and so many great memories were there. And I mean, I remember we were closed on Sundays back in forever. And so every Sunday, my parents would fix a huge dinner, and it could be guests. It could be their, you know, our clientele that would come over. It could be those that worked with us to come over. You didn't know, but there was always 30 plus around the table, and it was a blast. It really was. It was
Did
so
you
cool.
personally ever think of doing anything else?
Becoming in broadcast. I wanted to be a professional broadcaster.
Did you really?
I wanted to do sports.
Nice.
Yeah. I would love, my dream job would be to do the Blues game, you know, to be a hockey play-by-play guy, but no way, but it would be awesome. That's dream job.
That's very cool.
Maybe now, fast forward, country singer. I'd like to be a country singer.
There you go.
A man of many passions.
Those guys seem cool,
right?
They seem
to be having a good time.
Good time, don't they?
They're having a really good time. Post Malone tried it. Why not?
Yeah, why not, right? He made it.
Do you have a favorite amongst the restaurants, one that's near and dear to your heart, or one that you just really like being there?
No, it'd be like asking who's my favorite child and
right.
four kids. And no, because everyone is unique. Every location is unique. And we have so many great, loyal customers. And also along those loyal customers are our loyal employees that have worked with us for so many years and been such a great advocate for us as a family and as a restaurant hospitality group.
So are these like literally grandma's recipes that you guys are still cooking?
A lot of things go back to my grandma and grandfather, my dad and mom that developed it over the years. And I would remember always them trying to tweak the sauce or tweak a dressing or do something like put a little more sugar or less sugar or more salt or less, you know, and it was fun. But you know, and of course things changed through the years and we've tried to evolve with the changes as well.
Yeah.
So it's been a great, it's a great career. As I said earlier,
you seem legitimately happy.
Oh,
you really do.
Absolutely. I mean, it is truly a passion. I love it. I don't know if I'm going on too long.
Not at all.
I truthfully had a situation last night. I was working out at Twin Oaks and a friend of ours came by and they brought another group with them. And so as the young lady was leaving, she was telling me that she took her mom to chemo at Barnes every Tuesday. And after chemo, all her mom wanted to do was come and have pancakes at Chris's Pancakes. Mm. And so like, I'm like, this is why we do this.
That's
like,
right.
I mean, nothing else matters. Like when you can just do that, like how nice is it to be able to change somebody's day? Like,
yeah.
I mean, and I tell that to our team all the time. Like, remember that. Like, it doesn't matter. You don't know what that person's coming in the door feeling like, what kind of day they've had, what kind of night they've had. Try to change their trajectory for that day. Make them walk out with a smile.
Yeah. Everybody is dealing with something that you don't know about.
Yeah.
Just be cool. Be a good person.
Yeah, that's not that hard. Yeah, be genuine and be cool. I mean, seriously, like it's what we preach and try to, you know, pass along.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a humbling profession, but it's certainly a gratifying profession because you can make people smile.
Anything in the restaurant business that's always been sort of a dream of yours you haven't tried?
Not of yet, but never know. I mean, it's been great. The neat part about it is as I told you, we opened Bartolino's Twin Oaks, and it's brought us together as the Gen 3. Our parents were Gen 1 and grandparents, and Gen 2 are my brothers and I. And then Gen 3 is some of the kids who have gotten involved in our business. And each one of my brothers, other than my brother John, who had all girls, but they're involved. And our family is always involved because they support us all the time. I mean, it's even the ones that aren't like at the restaurants, but our family, our kids, they support us in everything we do. You know, they put up with the long hours. They're always there, you know, and it's so cool. But I was, you know, the Gen 3 Twin Oaks has been we brought everybody in, and they've all had a piece of that, of developing that restaurant. Mm-hmm. And that's really cool.
That's
so
neat.
I mean, next generation, They could do a little more heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they have some other dreams, and I'd love for them to see it, be able
see
to
it evolve.
See it evolve.
Talking exactly. to Chris Saraceno here, our buddy from Chris's at the Docket, Chris's Pancakes, Bartolino's. So kind of walk us through a typical day for you. What time you out the door? Mm-hmm. What time you back in?
Yeah. Recently, it's been up at usually by 6 and down at the MAC, get a little quick workout in, stop by the Docket, visit, make sure everybody's in, all things are going good. Okay, there we go down to Chris's at Watson. I'm there till 11 or 11:30. Try to get back here for lunch because usually the lunch hour down at the Docket is a good time. Mm-hmm. It's busy. Try to make my way through there. And I've been going down to Bartolino's on the Hill for a while, and then also been going out to Bartolino's Twin Oaks. And just again, it's just to have a presence. I mean, one of our successes is that a Saraceno's been in one of the restaurants, 99% of the time. It's just a passion to make sure that our guest and our team know that they're appreciative. And if I'm going to ask them to do something, or we as a group wants to ask them to do something, it's nothing we haven't done or won't do or can't do. And, we're right there in the trenches with them.
So We have lots of talks, you and I, about downtown and how it used to be and how it is now and how it needs to be. You guys are doing very well at the Docket because we're there 3 or 4 times a week and it's always busy. But what are your opinions about downtown? I mean, you got skin in the game.
Yeah. I mean, I've loved downtown St. Louis. I mean, I think what we have down here is such a special with regards to the city, right? I mean, we're that mid-level city. And I'll tell you what I think. Most of our problem is we kind of try to just like, we shouldn't put our chest out and be proud. We should just be that little guy in the room.
Inferiority complex.
And you know what? No way. We are a great city. There's many reasons that we are a great city. And we need to pump our chest a little bit and show the country that we are for real. And let's stop playing around and get together. Let's collaborate and make sure things can happen here in St. Louis. And
because
we have a lot. We have a lot to offer.
Yeah.
We have a lot to offer to this country.
Yeah, and it's been so recently that we were killing it down here. Like when I was a lawyer downtown, you didn't just walk into a place for lunch. You had a wait list every single place. Mm-hmm.
That would be a dream. In all honesty, it would be a dream that 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 restaurants open up down here. That hundreds of residents move in. And of course, we always have a little bit of challenge ahead of us to do that, but it's not insurmountable.
No.
If we all come together and people come together who have skin in the game, and I know I hear all the time, the interesting part, I'm not a critical person, I'm more of a positive person, but the interesting part that I think is like, I don't think the powers to be talk to the regular Joes enough. I really don't. And that's not to be critical to the powers to be. That is just an observation on my end. Everybody talks to the very, and we're a very philanthropical city. I mean, we have so many great families who have donated back to this city and our region for many years, and they deserve a big time seat at the table. But I think people should recognize those that are out there paying a price. I'm not even talking about like even small business owners, but I'm talking about inviting people that like work at downtown, like people that they don't know somebody's name, that they're not the big name, but like they should have a seat. What do they want? Like, and everybody has opinion. I think it's funny because they have all these get togethers for how to spend the Rams money. How about how to invest the Rams money, first of all, but how to spend the Rams money. They give them a seat at the table. Why don't we give the average Joe a seat at the table? What would you like to see in our city? Like, how do we come together? And it does. It takes the very rich and powerful to the everyday Joe that
and would give the average Joe buy-in.
And give them a buy-in.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Help them feel like their voice matters.
100%. And I am passionate about the city of St. Louis, not just downtown, not just South City where I live, work, invest in the city. 100%. And not just me, my family does, my brothers do. I mean, I live on the Hill. I'm proud of that. And the many, many people, the different neighborhood associations, business associations that participate and put tons of hours in, and it's all through Southampton, Northampton, Soulard. I mean, name it, right? It's Central West End. It's very powerful.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in, brother. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. What a joy and what an honor.
Continued success.
Appreciate it.
252 DGS and KMOX. So, Wheels, I see that they've been trying out the robot umpires, balls and strikes, for lack of a better term, in the minor leagues this year. They're going to do it in 13 parks with the thought that they may bring it to the majors in 2026.
Yeah, they're going to be testing out in spring training, too. So, yeah, they're calling it the ABS, or the automatic ball and strike system. But they're probably going to go more with a challenge system than a straight up the machine, the computer is calling every pitch. So umpires will still keep to making the calls, but if you think it's wrong, you can, hey, I want to challenge that one, and then the replay booth will kick it down. Yeah, that's a ball. No, that's a
strike. Wonder
how many
challenges they'll get.
I don't know. They got to sort that out, but they can do it pretty fast. I mean, you got somebody up in a booth.
Yeah, if I can see it, they can see it.
So all they have to do is make a quick signal, because what they're going to do is they're just going to look at the computer screen, which will have already registered the pitch.
Yes.
So it's not like you have to do a replay. It's not like
is
a replay.
Is it basically
system.
What we see on television?
It's better. Like, what we see on TV is very imprecise. It's much more of a guideline than a really accurate strike zone.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, it doesn't change enough for each player based on their height. Doesn't account for the fact that the strike zone is a three-dimensional object.
Right, box.
Yeah, I mean, it's the plate. It's the shape of the plate. So if the ball crosses any part of the plate at any point, it's a strike, or it should be a strike.
Okay, so if you took a plate and you just raised it up three-dimensionally.
Yep.
If the ball breaks that plane anywhere.
Yep. The ball passes through any part of that three-dimensional, you know, object, then it would be
Pluses and minuses of all this?
Well, I mean, the minuses are like, you know, you got to make sure it's right. You got to make sure that it is giving you very accurate. And they've been doing this in the minors already, right? I mean, this has already been tested. Minor league players have been able to challenge. I think they're going to start doing with major league players in spring training to just kind of give it a test run. I don't know that there's a really big downside. Like, unless
what do the umps think?
I don't know for sure, but I would think they like it because it just takes less of the heat off of them, right? Because if you get a call blatantly wrong, you're gonna get yelled at, and you're gonna get yelled at nonstop, especially if you screw up again. But if you screw up once really bad and the replay corrects it, the player says, no, that's a strike. And the replay corrects it. Well, now nobody's barking at you anymore, right? Or at least it calms down. So it might make their lives that much easier.
Think there's ever a time when more than balls and strikes become automated? Put chips in players' toes and toes of their shoes?
No, I don't know about that. But I've always thought we should be tracking the GPS on the ball. I think we should be doing that in the NFL. Why are we still doing this stupid thing where you got the chain on the sideline and a bunch of people that are just eyeballing everything when you can know exactly where the ball was? So if you need to go and do a replay and say, did that ball cross the line to gain for the first down? It's not even a question. You have that sensor technology in tennis. Why can't we have that in football? Why can't we have that in baseball for fair and foul?
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not complicated. You have to change the ball too much. I mean, I don't know what kinds of ways they would choose to do it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, adding a little microchip inside a ball, if that's what's necessary, is not going to change the weight of it or anything.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.